The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 535, recorded on April 9th, 2019.
And 35th edition of the Gaming Podcast and 368th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Denzer.
I am Scott Dirk.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry.
You know, TJ, you still sound like you're in a box.
it's the Razer headset. It's really finicky, the drivers on this thing, and I need to eventually probably either just uninstall everything and reinstall it or just get a new one.
Just get a $19 Logitech headset.
Yeah, Razer's been kind of disappointing, I think.
It sucks, too, because this is a really good headset. This is what I've been using for this podcast for the last year, but since I got a new PC, it's just it's having a hard time getting those drivers back to where they were.
Oh, okay. So, yeah. Anyways, I don't know why, but yeah, there we go. For some reason, the Google page was saying, trying to connect, and I'm trying to figure out what? I don't know what's going on there. Anyways, it's been an interesting week. What have you been playing, Scott?
I've been playing The Witness, the puzzle mist-like game where you walk around an environment doing little line puzzles from A to B, and you have to figure out the pattern that the game wants you to do to unlock the next one and the next one and the next one after that.
And Jonathan Blow's follow-up to Braid. Yeah. That was free on Xbox One a while ago. Here's the problem I have with that game.
It was also free on Epic Games.
This is the problem I have with that game. It's too quiet.
Yes, it's very quiet. No music.
There's no music. There's very little sound effects. It just makes you want to hit your head against the wall. And it's awful, it's extremely quiet if all you're doing are newspaper puzzles. It's the same puzzle, except with different variations. How many ways can you find the way to do, you have this button here and a triangle here, that means these spaces have to be coordinated. You know, it's just, I can only take it in short spurts because the sound is maddening. Even if I say put on a podcast or something like that, it's still maddening. You know, I mean, it's incredible he did 500 versions of the same puzzle.
Yeah, that I can understand, but the no music doesn't really bother me that much because, real life there isn't music playing at all times. So it's kind of like that's what they want that game to be like you're standing somewhere in a park and seeing all these weird puzzles that you figure out to move forward to the next place.
And it's an interesting environment. It's very saturated. Then you have to go on that boat that goes around the island, which takes forever. I wish there was a speed up button for that. Oh, there is, actually. But it doesn't speed up enough.
Okay.
Did you get inside the structure yet?
I'm not sure.
Every time you finish one area, it shoots out this
laser. Yeah, it goes to another.
Have you gotten all of them so you go and do the final puzzles yet?
No, not yet. I'm doing like some purple puzzles now.
Okay. Have you gotten to the part in which you have this, you have to look at the, it's actually landscapes that deal with a puzzle,
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, it's an interesting game. I felt no fulfillment from it. It's like, yep, that's a puzzle. I mean, there are games
how I feel about a lot of mobile games. One puzzle after another.
At least Professor Layton, changes up.
It changes up a lot. Professor Layton
It has variety, and this one is the same puzzle, basically.
Yeah. Same puzzle, but different rules each time.
That reminds me, Phoenix Wright, the trilogy is coming out on all platforms, including Xbox One and Skype and all that stuff. I have not played a single Phoenix Wright game, so I'm probably going to pick it up for the Xbox One.
Okay. That sounds good.
That actually is a good leeway to what I've been playing. I haven't actually been playing anything, but I have been watching an entire playthrough of the first Phoenix Wright game, because I did play that back in the day.
Why would you? And, okay, as long as you already played it. I would never watch a video of the Phoenix Wright games if I never played them, you know?
Well, if you don't want to play the game, I can see that. You just want to watch the playthrough.
The Phoenix Wrights are, like, one of the original, like, trendsetters for the visual novel that is popular nowadays. Phoenix Wright is very, very narrative heavy, and there are some, like, there are some logic puzzles and like, personal decision in the game. But it is very, very heavy on narrative. It's very, very heavy on dialogue and just, like, moving the story along through characters.
You know, don't mock it. I mean, he wields it well in the Capcom fighting games.
Right. Like, that game established a lot of what would become, like, the visual novel game that we know today. And it's really fun. The characters are fun, but also the cases are really, really sort of, like, very chilling for a kid's game.
Yeah.
I really enjoy a lot of what came out of that, I think if you like picking apart arguments, it'll be a fun adventure for you. But it's also like it's really funny. My brother and I used to talk about that game all the time because he's a lawyer. And
nothing in that game is legally right. Nothing.
And I would often ask him, like, what would happen if he just stood up in the middle of your opponent's testimony and just yelled objection and then threw evidence at them and said, take that!
Well, here's the thing. You know, Phoenix Wright is a puzzle game. It's not a legal procedure.
Yeah. It's really fun. It's really dramatic. It's got good characters. And, if you've never played Phoenix Wright before, it's well worth it.
It's actually more of a predecessor to L.A. Noire. Because in L.A. Noire, you have him screaming, you're lying, aren't you? Here's the evidence that I know that you're lying.
It's not far from the truth on that. It is pretty much. But I think it's much more involved in just like finding the inconsistencies in people's stories and then having the wherewithal from what you've seen in your logic and what you know of your evidence to like actually dissect them.
So I did get an email from your buddy Ian Pruhl,
mm-hmm.
And I'm in the Slipgate closed beta this coming weekend, from the 11th to the 14th. So it should be interesting. I mean, I got my hands on it back in PAX East. You know, we spoke about it last week. It's a mix between Portal and Halo, and it's extremely Halo because I was cycling through the weapons. Oh, look, there's the BR. There's a VR rifle. There's the machine gun. All the weapons are directly from Halo. I don't think Microsoft's going to make us think about it, you know. I think they're actually going to encourage it because it may, hey, you know, you're thinking of Halo. Well, guess what? We have the real thing coming soon. So
there's one weapon added late to the game that just came out at PAX South and I think was also available at PAX East. It's based on the contact beam, but it has it's basically a rail gun. And it has vibes of like Quake-ish and Red Faction feels, which make me really happy.
If the Spartan laser is in it, then I'll know, you know.
That's actually what it was based off, is the Spartan laser. It basically has a charge up time, but if you have if you can charge it up and you can aim it properly, it'll pretty much obliterate what it hits in a contact weapon fashion.
Yeah. It'll be interesting what happens to this game when Halo Reach comes out. It's going to be, you know, because on the other hand, you know, Halo doesn't have a portal gun, so.
Yeah, I think this will still have a good following only because, like, it does offer a sort of, it offers a twist on the first-person shooter that no one else is really doing, and it's kind of surprising that no one else is really doing.
No, too many other people are just doing Battle Royales.
Yeah.
I mean,
I'm definitely getting tired of the Battle Royales.
Yeah, same.
I mean, this game has your typical Unreal Tournament team deathmatch and capture the and all the other standard, you know, other standard game modes. And it's funny because everything's coming out with a Battle Royale mode. Some of the games that you wouldn't expect to have a Battle Royale mode, they're getting a Battle Royale mode. I'm trying to remember one game which you would not expect to have a Battle Royale mode is coming out with one. They have Pacer is a Battle Royale racer. So I think it has a Battle Royale mode. So it's just, like, insane. I'm waiting for Chess Battle Royale, in which the chessboard keeps on getting smaller.
I wish you would have went with more rhymes on that. Pacer is a Battle Royale chaser.
I also got a review key for Rise of Industry, which has been in early access for a while. It's going to be released in early May, and it's exactly what it sounds like. You know, it's sort of a tycoon game, so I'm looking forward to trying that one out. You have to build your factories and all that stuff, so it'll be interesting.
Tycoon games are a lost art, and like it's sad that we only ever see them as indies anymore.
Yeah. I've also been playing a lot of Shadow of War. I can't tell you how addictive that game is. It's 2 years old now, and I'm still playing it to the expense of other games. So I think that, you know, when you're playing a game that, well, after 2 years of release, you know, that is basically a single-player game. I mean, it does have stuff like, you know, going online and avenging people, but that's just playing the game by yourself anyway. You know, when you're playing a single-player game 2 years after it was released and you have access to other games, it's not like you're a little kid and you only have $50 for one game. You know, when you actually have, you know, when you're actually playing that game, even though you're getting other free games in front of you, it's like, tells you how good that game is. Monolith kicks ass. They've always kicked ass. They're behind No One Lives Forever. They're behind Tron 2.0. You know, they know how to make a game, and they know how to hit that sweet spot. You know, and I think that's important. A lot of games are sort of fun, but very few games just hit that sweet spot right on the nose, you know, where it just feels perfect. I mean, there are good games, but you know when you have a game that really speaks to you because it just hits that sweet spot right in the middle there. As a matter of fact, that's our question of the week. What game hit that sweet spot for you that just made it perfect in terms of just smooth gameplay? And I don't mean smooth gameplay as in frames per second. I just mean, you know, you're really vibing to it and you're just instinctually going along with it. How about you, Scott? Is there a game that was like that for you that isn't named Minecraft?
That is like what now?
Just a game that hits your sweet spot, you know? It's like...
Yeah. Pillars of Eternity did.
Really?
I thought it had different things and still had nostalgic things that reminded me of Baldur's Gate, and they even introduced, I liked it anyways, the the choice options you would get to picking how to go through a certain situation.
Well, it's Obsidian. And, I mean, Obsidian lives for that crap. Obsidian lives for the, your choices matter. I mean, look at Fallout New Vegas.
Well, it definitely did.
You know, I mean, look at Fallout New Vegas, you know, everything that you do. In Fallout 3, Fallout 4, yeah, you can go with factions, but in Fallout New Vegas, you actively help one faction and piss off the other faction, and your choices really do matter in that game. So yeah, Obsidian loves to do that. That's why I'm excited about Dying Light 2, because Chris Avellone is working on it, and you know what he's working on, because that game is bragging about your choices have consequences, which is interesting in a game that's basically a zombie parkour game. Mm-hmm. How about you, TJ? I know it's going to be a fighting game. It has to be one of the Arc System games.
Yes, again. it's Shining Force from the original Sega Genesis.
Yeah.
Shining Force established so much for me as far as like how good the music in a game could be, how good the animation in like a strategy game could be, how cool the character classes could be. I would argue that without Shining Force, and Fire Emblem did come before it, but Shining Force had a flair that just like never came out of Fire Emblem for me. Mm. That I feel like you couldn't have had games like Final Fantasy Tactics or Advance Wars without Shining Force like setting this template for how good a turn-based strategy game could be.
You know, speaking of tycoon games, I will say Railroad Tycoon Deluxe Edition was that sweet spot for me in as well. I mean, just, you know, I played that endlessly. I just couldn't stop playing it. Even though games are different, it's sort of like I just, you know, I got to make my train retracts. You know, I want to see if I can get that mix of cargo, of human cargo and goods cargoes and freight cargo and all that stuff working perfectly. So, yeah. Let me ask you a question, Scott. Which civilization hit the sweet spot best for you?
Oh, probably Civ 4, I think. Mm-hmm. I had so many leaders to choose from. I had so many options to do with my resources, and it felt very in-depth to me. And I really enjoyed it.
You know, it's going to be you're going to chuckle at this, but the civilization that hit the sweet spot for me was the very first one.
I can understand that. That was the first game, and you had
just
the Ode to Joy music.
It wasn't just the first game. It was just the way the text came up and all that stuff. I know people metagamed it to death. They got these 80 population cities and stuff like that. I never played like that. I just played like I was doing regular Civilization. You know, and the other Civs, you know, I love Civ 6, but none of them ever felt like when I was playing it, when I was playing the very first Civilization, even now, there's just sort of a purity to it, you know. So, I'd also like to talk about some board games. I played for the first time, this game's 2 years, 2 years old, Burke's Gambit. Now, this is based on Aliens, but it doesn't have the license. So there's none of the characters in it. But in this game, you have a role. You have, like, you're a captain or an engineer or something like that. You're either a cargo crewman or you're with acquisitions, you know. And one of you has the alien in you. They call it a parasite, but it's the alien. And the object of the game is the regular crew want to airlock that person, including that person, by the way, if he's a regular character, if he's with the regular crew. Yeah, kill me, please. And the company, the acquisitions, want to save the person so that they can send it to the weapons division. So, and here's the thing. You cannot check to see if you have your parasite yourself. Other people have to tell you, and they may not tell you, you know. And you don't. You have to find out who's with the company and who's with the cargo crew. And it's a wonderful level of paranoia, you know, as the game goes on. So, yeah, that game really – what's it called? And I'm really into Hidden Trader games because there's another game which I saw which looked really cool, and it's an actual licensed game. It's Game of Thrones Oathbreakers. And it's another Resistance type game. And I saw it at PAX. He says, yeah, I want it. So I pre-ordered it, and pre-ordering it to a bonus character.
That's nice.
Yeah. So I'm interested to see what happens with that one. So, yeah. Otherwise, nothing much. I mean, there's so many games that are coming that they keep on notifying me, hey, guess what? This game is now available on Epic since I'm part of the press thing. I think The Witness was one of the games that I got for free in the Epic store. I haven't downloaded it. Maybe if I'm bored and I just want to do some puzzles, I'll do it.
Yeah, it was free during the weekend, so I grabbed it. Oh. I figured, why not?
Sure. We're going to move on to game news. Wave Splitter to be blocked on PC and Xbox One and Destiny 2. And this comes to us from Shaq News. Bungie is about to prevent Xbox One and PC Destiny 2 players from equipping a weapon that they may have purchased from Zur. Introduced into the game via patch last weekend, the PlayStation 4 exclusive Wave Splitter weapon was inadvertently offered to players on other platforms, and it'll be soon blocked from use on both PC and Xbox One. Upon learning that some players were able to access the PS4 exclusive weapon, Bungie community manager Cosmo issued a statement acknowledging the issue, promising that the team was already working on a fix. Here's the full statement that is posted to the official Destiny 2 forums. We're investigating an issue where the Sony exclusive weapon, the Wave Splitter, was made available from Zur on Xbox and PC. We're currently working on a fix. In the meantime, PC and Xbox players who have acquired the weapon will be able to use it. After the fix goes live, they will still have it in their inventories, but they will not be able to equip this weapon until it enters the general exotic loot panel in September 2019. Of course, many fans aren't exactly happy with the change. The Wave Splitter was meant to be a timed exclusive, however, so the chance to use the weapon on PC or Xbox One could be considered something of a teaser for what those players can expect to use later in the year. Though both Destiny and Destiny 2 have played a host of a series of PlayStation-exclusive weapons, maps, and strikes, it's not exactly intentional for those things to launch simultaneously across all platforms. Mistakes do happen, of course. At the very least, it seems that Bungie is moving quickly to set things right for all players. All users who purchase the Wave Slider will be able to enjoy it for now, but it will soon be an PlayStation-exclusive until this coming September. So, yeah, the idea of having exclusive stuff in games is getting really old.
Yeah, and I think this is another problem with the whole digital software. You can't, this stuff like this gets locked out from one person to another, and you can't really do anything about it because that data file is blocked from being used on anything but the PlayStation. So that really does suck.
You know what's funny is that this was never mentioned to be a timed exclusive, so I'm pretty sure Sony's kind of upset that they had to. Yeah, it is a timed exclusive. You know, if you wanted a way, you could get it later. You know, it's supposed to be PlayStation 4 only! !
And the thing is,
very few of these things are ever totally exclusive. You know. I remember back with Soul Calibur 4, I think it was, you know, Xbox owners would get Yoda and PlayStation owners would get Darth Vader. And I know, you know, just wait a couple of months, it'll be available. Darth Vader will be available on Xbox and Yoda will be available on PlayStation. And you know what? They were. So, yeah. It's just silly. I mean, the thing that Microsoft's doing with the Game Pass, I think, is the future, in which they say, you know what? We make the games. Anybody who wants to pay a subscription can play them, you know. It's going to be the future. Actually, we're going to be discussing something related to that as well. TJ?
Oh, do you want me to start the next one?
No, just comment before you start the next one.
Okay. I mean, like, that's a really silly thing to decide to pull it back. I mean, like, who is really – is Sony really all that upset about a single gun being put out for all audiences?
Are they really mad about that one gun? I don't think PC and Xbox players, if they didn't have access to it, were going to moan and say, oh, we don't have the gun. Let's all buy PlayStation 4, right? Or get the PlayStation 4 version of this game now because we don't have a single gun in the game.
Yeah, that's never going to be incentive for me to buy it just because a stupid little gun is in the game.
And you know, Microsoft. Go ahead.
Wave Splitter isn't even the best gun in the game. There are so many others. Pick one. There are a lot of weapons in Destiny 2.
You can blame Microsoft for this because Sony didn't really care about exclusives, but when Microsoft started getting early access to Call of Duty maps, that was a big deal. And that's the thing, you know. Getting multiplayer maps early is a big deal because a lot of people are very competitive on those forums and they want to have access to all the maps as soon as possible. A single weapon? No. Not really, no. Yeah.
There's only one weapon in all of Destiny that I can think of that people would legitimately be pissed about if this happened, and that's the Gjallarhorn rocket launcher because that thing is legendary and everybody loves it. It's a meme. It's a meme. It's so important to them. So, like, other than that, who gives a fuck? You could call it the butt crack McGee gun and nobody would care. Like, it doesn't matter what it is, as long as it's not the Gjallarhorn.
Yeah. Let's move on to the next item. Go ahead, TJ.
Borderlands 3 cross-platform multiplayer is something that we're looking closely at, according to TK. From Games Radar. Borderlands 3 cross-platform multiplayer, aka crossplay, is not a confirmed feature, despite some leaks. But it could still happen. Borderlands 3 publisher 2K Games revealed in a statement to GameSpot that it's investigating the possibility of Borderlands 3 players teaming up no matter what system they play on, potentially following the lead of other multiplayer games like Fortnite and Rocket League. Crossplay is something that we're looking at closely, but we don't have anything to confirm or announce at this time, a 2K representative said. This follows the discovery and subsequent removal of a cross-platform support feature in the Microsoft Store listing for Borderlands 3. That bullet point appearing in just one spot indicates it was a mistake. But it could also have been a premature reveal for a feature that Gearbox and 2K are holding back to announce later. Borderlands 3 cross-platform multiplayer would be perhaps the biggest step Gearbox could take in modernizing the series. even more so than its co-op scaling system that gives everybody the appropriate challenge and rewards. Even if Borderlands 3 doesn't launch with cross-platform multiplayer when it arrives on September 13th, it could always have the option in later. And I think we all know who is the factor here that's keeping this from being a cut-and-dry case.
The thing is that Microsoft would know, because they'd probably be, you know, they have to know about, you know, their infrastructure, you know, with Xbox Live. And Sony would know, and I don't know if Nintendo would know. I would just think, you know, Nintendo, just adopt Xbox Live already. We know you're shitted online. Just let other people do it for you. So that, you know, buddies can chat with each other over Xbox Live, you know, and make up plans. And, you know, that's one thing. I know some people who just use Xbox Live to chat with their friends while they're watching a Netflix movie.
Yeah. I think we've done that on PlayStation, so that's a really fun feature to have. I think that's a good move for Borderlands 3 to get more sales, to do cross-platform. Because having exclusives, it does seem to limit your options for selling the game to different consoles, because if someone just has one console and you say, well, it's not coming to that console, then, you know, you lose out on a sale. If that somebody maybe really wanted that game, they just want it on that one console that they have.
By the way, Borderlands 3 isn't confirmed for Switch, but it keeps on bouncing in between it. I'm pretty sure it's going to come to Switch.
Yeah.
You know.
Cross-platform is just a cool thing anyways, because, like, okay, it's like, for me, I often get my stuff in PS4, but I have a buddy who, like, when he does his work, he often gets his games in for Xbox. It would be cool if we could play Borderlands 3 on PlayStation 4 and Xbox. Like, that would be fun.
That would.
But I don't know if it'd be fun more than convenient.
It would be convenient. And I think it would be fun. Like, but the fact of the matter is, like, when somebody says crossplay is something we're looking at but can't confirm yet, I'm going to just assume that's code for Sony hasn't given us the green light.
Look at it. You assume it's going to be everybody but Sony. I mean, hey, look, like, you know, if Sony wants to be left out in the cold, that's fine, you know?
Because at this point, like, PC is easy to develop crossplay for. Microsoft and PC work together. Like, I mean, Microsoft is PC, so of course Xbox and PC are easy to make crossplay for.
Hell, they have Xbox anywhere, so.
Nintendo and mobile are kind of like tagging along, and Nintendo more closely.
Oh, no, don't insult mobile like that. Mobile's way ahead of the curve over the Switch. Come on. I mean, people were playing multiplayer Fortnite on their cell phones before they were doing it on the Switch.
Oh, sure. I'm just saying that I would think that Nintendo is tagging along closer to Microsoft than anyone like Apple at this point.
I'm still shocked that people are playing Fortnite on a mobile. I just can't. You know, I hear that some of them have peripherals that allow them to use game pads with their cell phone, but still, you know.
There are tournaments. There are Fortnite tournaments specifically on mobile, and that blows my mind.
That's crazy.
Just people sitting in chairs with their iPads playing Fortnite for thousands of dollars.
Jesus.
I guess it works for them.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if you can, why not?
Right.
I mean, here's the thing. It's rare when a game isn't, say, at Evo. Like, remember when Capcom versus Marvel Ultimate was pulled from Evo? I mean, that was a shocker, even though it's like, yeah, you can't play. I mean, people will play in a competition. I mean, hell, there are Plants vs. Zombies competitions, you know? There are Peggle competitions. So, of course.
Oh, Peggle's fun.
Well, it doesn't have to be fun. It just has to be competitive.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm not going to downplay the effort and, like, research and development that goes into making crossplay, but I am going to assume – but I would be incredibly shocked if anyone besides Sony was the gatekeeper behind this. We're still looking at it but don't have anything to confirm yet.
Or maybe they just won't have something to say at E3, because E3 is so friggin' boring. You need some big announcements at E3 just to make it look good. You know, I'm going to be interested to see what's going to happen at E3 this year and next year. I mean, this year Microsoft may actually unveil the next console. Everybody's going to be unveiling a console no matter what in 2020, you know. But that's the E3 has been such a snooze fest for the past couple of years for me. Not for you, I know, because I introduced you to the lead developer of Rainbow Six Siege and and all that other stuff. But it's like, you know, the only reason why I go to E3 is just to connect with people. That's the only reason why I go now. For game news, it's pointless.
Yeah, I can see that.
Anyways, move on to the next one. Go ahead, Scott.
Okay. Enter the Gungeon adds dog petting after being called out on Twitter. This is from IGN. Enter the Gungeon, a bullet hell roguelike originally released in 2016, has officially added the ability to pet dogs after a popular Twitter account noted its previously inability to do so. On March 8th, the Twitter account @CanYouPetTheDog, which has done the holy work of cataloging the games let you pet dogs and which games apparently don't, tweeted out, "You cannot pet the dog in Enter the Gungeon." For treacherously developer Dodge Rolls, Dave Crooks was tagged in a comment, subsequently replying, "Hold my beer." Ultimately, a farewell to ARMS, a free and final update for Enter the Gungeon, was released in April 5th, included the ability to pet the dog, Junior 2. Can You Pet the Dog Twitter account has been gaining popularity since its inception in March 2019, letting followers know you can pet dogs in games like Darkest Dungeon, Mass Effect 2, kind of, but can't in games like Garfield Lasagna World Tour, and heartbreakingly, The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild.
Yeah, the dog petting...
play with the dog.
The dog petting in Mass Effect 2 is actually your petting of Aaron. But, yeah.
I love that. You pet the dog Twitter.
I have not played Enter the Gungeon yet. I'm one of the few people who haven't. And I keep on hearing people talk about how great it is.
Almost as great as Can You Pet the Dog Twitter.
Yeah, apparently.
Do you think you could pet the dog in Fable? Any of the Fable games? I think so.
Yeah, you could have
Fable. Yeah,
I was joking.
Right.
Remember, in Fable 2, you will love this dog. You will take care of this dog. Peter Molyneux went on and on and on about the dog. Although I shouldn't mock Fable 2, because after Fable 2, everybody had the dog. I mean, yeah, Fallout had dog meat first, but Fable 2 was the one in which made the dog a real companion, you know. And every game after that had the real companion dogs, you know, from Call of Duty to everything else, you know. To, of course, you know, Fallout. I mean, they made dog meat more personable, and you could pet them in the game. You could also accidentally
in Fallout 1?
What? No. Well, dog meat was always around, but you could pet them in Fallout 3 and Fallout 4.
Oh, know? Okay.
I mean, you know, you could also blow them up accidentally with your grenades, but that's something else.
Yeah.
We're going to move on to the next item. And this is one, you know, that makes me sigh and chuckle and glad I don't play this game at all. A real-life political lobbyist has been banned from EVE Online for corruption. And this comes to us from IGN. One of EVE Online's prominent politicians, who also happens to be a political lobbyist in real life, has been banned from the game for engaging in corruption. According to developer CCP Games, Brian Schoenemann, also known in-game as Brisk Rubal, has been permanently banned for, quote-unquote, sharing confidential information with a member of his alliance that was later used by another alliance member to conduct illicit in-game transactions. As reported by PC Gamer, Schoenemann was until the ban a member of EVE Online's Council of Stellar Management. If you're unfamiliar with EVE Online, the huge spacefaring MMO has its own government made up of elected players who help CCP Games design new features and updates. Alongside Schoenemann's permanent ban, two other players known as Dark Shines and Pandoralica have received year-long bans. All ISK, EVE's currency, and goods associated with the scandal have been confiscated from their accounts. All parties are claimed to be assisted. A lot of bullshit about Schoenemann protesting on subreddit, talking about how, "I will fight these false allegations, restore my reputation, and seek all avenues for recourse available to me for these reckless actions." And I'm going to tell you something. People take this game way too fucking seriously. I mean, we've all saw the stories of how people literally lost thousands of in-game dollars because of betrayals and sneak attacks and all this stuff. I mean, you go to Kotaku, if you look at the EVE Online, if you look at the EVE Online tag, and it's like these incredibly games that make me think, yeah, you're really in the way out west, at least in World of Warcraft. I don't have to worry about losing actual money.
Yeah, that's true.
We're talking about, like, in-game currency to out-game currency. We're talking about people that spend, like, I think one of the capital ships in the game actually costs 4,000 real dollars to get your hands on. And that's absurd.
That's insane.
Well,
I agree.
Star Citizen. I wonder if Star Citizen is going to have the same sort of... No one's going to be as geeky as EVE Online.
Star Citizen is starting to become like the Half-Life 3. It's never coming.
Here's the thing. People are playing it. It's an alpha.
Okay.
And it's in constant development, you know. It may be in constant development. At least it's being worked on, and at some point it's – but here's the thing. You know what the appeal for Star Citizen was? It was to live your virtual life in the game like a space Second Life, you know. And I'm going to tell you something. I love those commercials. I pretend that I'm the fake commercials. I usually put them on my TV watching, you know. And I'll be doing something else, and I'll be pretending I'm living in a society with spacecraft, and these are actual commercials selling ships, because they are that convincing.
Wow.
Even when Lance Henriksen is narrating the commercials, it's even more realistic, because you have your celebrity doing a commercial. But
it does sound interesting.
There is an actual book that somebody wrote called Empires of EVE. It's by Andrew Groen, and it's actually like a history book of major events that have happened in the EVE Online universe.
Yeah, EVE Online has been around forever.
And it's a fascinating, like, it's a look specifically at 2003 to 2009.
Yeah, EVE Online launched in 2003.
Mm-hmm. But, like, it's fascinating to see, like, what people were doing to each other in this game, and like how playing the game, but also the communities that formed, the forum stuff, the end game and out game like communication that took place, and also the transactions, the betrayals, the interactions, the hatred, all of that jazz. It's crazy.
And, you know, EVE Online doesn't exactly have a huge membership. I think it's a couple hundred thousand, you know. But they support the thing so much.
Yeah. It's one of the most rabid communities I've ever heard of.
Yeah, I remember the first time I was in contact with it. With one of the reps from CCP, she had all these charts talking about the fluctuating currency within the game, and my eyes rolled. It's like, no, no, no. But I will say this, you know, it's the only game which managed to actually create a Second Life. And you play World of Warcraft, you know, you're not going to be that, that warlock, you know, your entire time. You don't have to worry about – in EVE Online, time passes in the game when you're not playing it, and you got to be careful because you can log in and find out some serious shit happened to your stuff. You know, at least I don't have to worry about that in World of Warcraft unless someone hacked my account and stole my character.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say Second Life, but I guess when you log out, you're logged out and nothing will happen to your stuff, or shouldn't, unless you get hacked.
You come back, it's like, oh, by the way, the company you work for was decimated and you lost this money.
That's the other thing, is the permanence of ships in EVE Online. When you lose a ship, it's gone forever. You don't get it back. There's no respawn. So, like, if you, like, player-wise, whatever, but if you lose a ship, that ship is dead, and everything that you put, all the money that you put into it, is gone with it.
There's some players who deliberately don't buy a ship, and they just work for one of the corporations. It's a lot less expensive that way.
Yeah, and like you can log out, and your stuff is like protected while you log out. But then you have people that like keep track of where you logged out in the universe, and will like haunt and camp that place and wait for you to come back. That's a thing.
Spawn camping from hell. See, that's why I'm never going to play this game.
Yeah,
I play games to make myself feel better.
Yeah, not horrible.
I feel it play games so that I can relax.
These guys play this game like it's an actual job, and they're trying to earn their paycheck.
And here's the thing. for some it is, because they actually make real life money off this game. You know, it's insane. I mean, they, you know, the economy is a real economy, and you can get real life money for stuff. So yeah, for some people, it reminds me of those people who make a living just buying and selling on eBay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are people who have no jobs just buying and selling shit on eBay. Buy low, sell high, basically.
So yeah, if you want to read about one of the most interesting video game communities of all time, you should check out Empires of Eve. It's an awesome read.
Yeah. Anyways, the question of the week was, what game did you find the most click the most with you? You know, just hit that sweet spot. You know, I'm going to tell you something. I also am a very good judge of games that are coming out, and it looks so much like Swag and Sorcery is going to hit that spot for me. I am really looking forward to that game.
Which one?
Swag and Sorcery.
Swag and Sorcery.
Yeah, that's the game we talked about last week. It's the one in which you take control of a town and you equip adventurers and they go out. You know, it looks like a Commodore 64 game. It's made by the same guy who did Fight Club and Graveyard Keeper.
Oh, Punch Club.
Punch Club, yeah. Sorry.
Okay.
Yeah, I almost said Fight Club.
Yeah, that might be a good game to look into.
I dig it. I love Lazy Bear games.
Yeah. And next week, I will let you know what my experience with Splitgate is like. You know, and I wonder if Ian actually did email me with the code, or if it was just a mass email. Because here's the thing with that, with those developers, like I said last week, those two guys, they started because they played Halo in their dorm rooms in college. And this is
basically... Ian's,
go ahead.
Ian's pretty good about... if Ian emails you directly, it's usually a personal message. He has PR to actually send out, like, mass emails. If he sent you something himself, then it's probably the code.
But it would be funny if it wasn't, because it had his name on it, damn it. It had his name in the subject line. Not in the subject line, I mean, the from thing. But like I said, you know, it is basically a Halo fan game, and that's not a bad thing. I mean, the best Sonic game that was released in the past 20 years came from fans, that the fan developers – what was it called? It wasn't not Sonic Forces.
Mania.
Yeah, Sonic Mania. That was the one game that was not developed by Team Sonic, and it was really, really good. So, yeah.
Sonic trip. The live-action Sonic trailer is going to be out by next week, and we should talk about it.
Team Sonic Racing?
No, just like a live – it's live-action. The live-action monstrosity that they're coming up with.
Oh, yeah.
Jim Carrey plays Dr. Robotnik.
I mean, not all fan games are good. I mean, all I have to say is Hunt Down the Freeman. And we, you know what? That's going to be next week's gaming history. We're going to talk about Hunt Down the Freeman. Have you played Hunt Down the Freeman?
I have not.
And you know Hunt Down the Freeman.
It sounds like is that a Dune thing?
It is one of the worst games ever produced by fans. It is a Half-Life fan game. And one of the outrageous things is that it is one of the worst games you'll ever play. And it was sold on Steam using Valve's property. Think about it for a moment. This is very close to being an asset flip game, except asset flip games are better.
That's incredibly bad.
And no, yeah. But the thing that really angers people is that Valve allowed this to be stole on the Steam store. So it's tacit approval from Valve. Do yourself a favor and watch the zero punctuation for Hunt Down the Freeman. And also the guy who does I Hate Everything was actually cast as a voice in it, and he eviscerates the game in his review. And it's interesting because he has the insider's view, because, you know, he was hired by these people, you know, and one of the things you'll notice if you play this game is you can tell everybody just recorded it off their own mics in their own rooms, because all the sound quality is different when dealing with voices. And, of course, you have people who are not actors trying to act.
That's sad.
It is horrific. So it is worth a YouTube Let's Play, in fact, if you want. But I, like I said, the zero punctuation and the I Hate Everything reviews of that game are just hilarious. And, you know, it's just It's just great. Anyways, look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments on our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us some iTunes comments. You can find me on Twitter at Jonah Falcon.
You find me at Johnny Chugs.
You can find me at Alpha Shard.
And we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Have fun, be cool, play games, y'all.
This is sort of a short episode, but, you know, sometimes you need a short episode.
Okay.